This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Doctor in the House, brought to you by AIA Vitality.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's a Friday and he's brought the rain with him for sure this time. Welcome to the show, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. How are you today?
I'm very good. I'm a bit disappointed with the rain, but you know what? Today we're going to have exodus of people leaving KL because of the long weekend.
Yes, indeed.
And then, of course, when it rains in KL, the whole city comes to a gridlock. What better things to do and listen to our show?
I know. And if you smoke, don't change channels because this is something we'd really like you to hear about.
And it's going to change your life.
It is going to change your life because, the Lancet just came up with a report that says smoking now causes 1 in 10 deaths worldwide. And this is a new study. It shows half of them in just 4 countries, actually: China, India, US and Russia. Interesting. Those are BRIC countries with the exception of the US, but Brazil has done actually on the smoking front. We'll come back and talk about that. But joining us today as well is Dr. Zariha Muhammad Zain. She's the Malaysian Women's Action for Tobacco Control and Health. It is an NGO, I understand,
yes,
Dr. Zariha.
Yes.
You want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Thank you very much. And it's really nice and very grateful that you're having me here today.
Yeah.
On a cool, rainy Friday.
Yes.
Really, it's nice. My watch, the Malaysian Women's Action for Tobacco Control and Health, is we've been around for a while, actually, almost a decade now. Our focus is on, of course, tobacco control, on smoking and so on. And our main interest is women, family and children, because this is the group that is very vulnerable.
Vulnerable.
Yeah, and we also at the same time, although we are victims of people who smoke around us, husbands and so on, but women are the people who will make the change in the family because they raise their children and making sure that the sons don't smoke and even have the powers to persuade the husbands not to smoke. So that's why we want to focus on this.
So let me get this right.
Thanks, Dr. Zariha. That's just one more thing I have to add to my to-do list.
On top of everything else, Meera has to juggle her life for the family.
Yes.
Actually, when I heard that your NGO is primarily focused on women, my immediate reaction, probably many listeners in Klang Valley, is thinking that, is it because there are more and more women taking up smoking, hence this NGO is necessary? In fact, what you're describing is slightly different.
Yeah, actually both. This thing about women taking up smoking is rather a new phenomenon, especially in this part of the world, in Malaysia. But when we started out, we were more focusing on women being a victim to passive smoking, the husband smoking, and people around.
I like the way she said victims.
In a way. But of course, more and more women are empowered. They shouldn't think that they are victims anymore. But nonetheless, there are women who are maybe less educated and not too aware, and they are just taking it up as something that is normal, when actually the smoke that they breathe in, involuntary or, is actually very harmful to themselves. And this is an opportunity for them to know that they have to do something about it.
If you'd like to know more about smoking, or, if you have a question for Dr. George or Dr. Zariha, well, give us a call. The number is 0377 109 000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 0162019 000. You're probably wondering why Dr. George is in this conversation, but you know what? Smoking and men's health, very closely linked.
Indeed.
But just before we come to that, you spoke about secondhand smoke. There's also something called third-hand smoking.
That's
now.
Right.
What is that?
This is, again, a very new thing. Not terribly new, but it's been only a few years now. It is found that when somebody smoke in a room and the person has left maybe a day already, but the effect of the smoking that happened in that room is still felt, because the cigarette smoke that was released from the smoking, the act of smoking, has got particles, hanging out in the air, and then it settles down
as residue.
And it you know, settles on carpets and upholsteries and, you know, tables and so on. And when somebody walks into the room, even though it's been cleaned, there may be still residue. And when, as you walk, the particles could just rise up from the upholsteries or the carpets, and then you breathe that back in. It's most significant if the person who is breathing this third-hand smoke is a child, where, you know, there's
presumably like toddlers playing on the carpet and
exactly.
that sort of thing. The sediment is left in there.
Right.
Well, you know, it's like, is it proven? Is it proven that tertiary smoking actually is that harmful?
Yes, it has been proven. There are papers, scientific papers, that has shown that it does have negative effect on the health of these people who breathes in third-hand smoke.
But don't you think we've done well as a country in that we have now, you can't smoke indoors, right? And just very recently, there's amendments to the control of tobacco products.
Did you see she frowned?
You know, now you cannot smoke in national parks, in state parks, in public parks. You know, there's a whole list here. Canopy Bridge, you know, we've done quite well,
I think this is a time to invite the Klang Valley to join the conversation to see whether these prohibitive measures
make a difference.
Yeah. Right? You know, these kind of like gory pictures, taxations, you know, prohibiting people from smoking near the building, near the playground.
Yep.
Are they making any difference? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
What do you think?
Honestly, there's so much room still that, you know, to do. We have touched only the surface. There's a lot more things that needs to be done. All right, we have introduced measures on, you know, no smoking areas, on those lists that you've read. That's not good enough. We need more. Right now, you can smoke anywhere except these listed places. It should be the other way around. No smoking is allowed
everywhere else, apart from designated.
Except designated.
Well, I want to be a complete devil's advocate here. I think none of those measures actually make that much difference. The reason why I'm saying that is because, you know, Australia probably is perceived as the most aggressive anti-smoking country.
Yep, yeah.
You know, they set up laws to say that you're not allowed to smoke within 4 meters from a building. Mm-hmm. They set up a law saying you're not allowed to touch a cigarette within 10 meters of a playground. They are the first country to actually come up with the plain packaging.
That's right.
And then have massive amount of all that gory pictures to say smoking kills your kids, and then, you know, erectile dysfunction and whole work. And there are studies to show that majority of these actually eventually end up people completely kind of like desensitized of all these regulations. Can that be true?
Well, actually, Australia did show, it has been shown that there is a reduction in prevalence of smoking.
Okay, I'll go through that. They introduced plain packaging in 2012.
That's right.
And the government saw a very small drop in smoking prevalence of 0.55%. So, I mean, you can say it's a drop.
It is a drop.
Yes.
Yes.
But not a huge, not a significant one.
Yes. You know, the thing is that it will take time, definitely. But it certainly, you know, there is a, if not waves, there would be ripples from these actions that has been done, and we are not just focusing on, you know, diehard smokers and so on. You are also focusing whatever policy that the government, in this case the Australian government, introduced. It's also trying to influence the smoking habits of people who are about to go into the smoking, and these are usually the youths and the young people. And if you don't have those measures, they would come into the whole pool of smokers, and it would have been even a lot worse. It may not be a drop at all, it would be an increase. So we do really need to continuously, otherwise it's no point. You have to keep on at it.
Keeping on even though with 0.5% reduction, do you think we can't really, you know, in my opinion, I think we need to hear from the smokers themselves, you know, mm-hmm. because I think we're going to get some smokers calling in to say, look, you know, did any of these pictures prohibit me? I mean, in fact, actually, interesting thing, you know, Mira early on was asking me, like, you were wondering why Dr. George is here. Dr. George is always there,
yes.
Like, which is part of the furniture. So I'm here for two capacity. And number one is that I have a large number of patients who find it very very difficult to quit, which is what I'm going to ask advice from you, because a lot of them actually suffers from bladder cancer. They keep getting recurrences, and then this is a real headache for us. Yes. The second ones are men who has erectile dysfunction, sexual dysfunction, and there's clear evidence that links the vascular damage.
Can you say that again, George? There is clear evidence.
That's
because
right.
Because the smokers would disagree with me. They always ask me, where's the science?
That's right.
Show me the papers. So you tell me.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
George.
Okay. Right. The thing is that we
bladder
actually
cancer.
That's right.
Let's
bladder cancer actually is bladder cancer. We know specifically that if you have two groups of patients who actually are exposed to the tobacco smoking and one group is not, and then you cease the actual exposure, and then over a period of 2 years, because we need to monitor these group of patients over long term and to see whether there's recurrences or not, and then the one who actually stopped smoking within a year, then your risk is almost equivalent to people who has never started before.
And really? And
it, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Now, because the recurrences is as the prohibition of recurrences, it's almost as good as giving the patients chemotherapy. Yeah. So you choose between chemotherapy or stop smoking. Some people actually choose chemotherapy because they find it's difficult to stop. So that's the reason why I want to find out what are the ways for them to help. All right? Okay. And then when it comes to the erectile dysfunction, you know, we can do biopsies of the vessels and into the male genitalia, and then we can actually narrowing of the small vessels. You imagine that the vessels eventually will just get narrowed up due to hypertension, cholesterol, diabetes, and smoking. Smoking is the one that actually will facilitate this quite fast. And then if you actually see the smallest vessels always get affected first, then eventually it will move on to a bigger vessel such as the coronary arteries, and then, you know, and strokes, and then that sort of thing. And then so you always find that erectile dysfunction perhaps is an early precursor of something bad is going to happen for the rest of the body. Yeah. And those evidence are actually quite clear.
Okay.
Yeah. It's so true. You were saying that people who smoke, they're finding it very difficult to quit. No doubt, it's definitely the case. But there are also smokers who are able to quit because of these measures that is being taken by the government, like increasing tax and then increasing price of cigarettes. It has been shown in many countries in the world that there is a drop in the demand. In Malaysia, the argument that if you increase price and increase tax, there will be smuggling increase.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Does that
always
happen?
The thing is that has been the long, you know, long argument of the tobacco industries. They've got no other
points other to put
points.
Forward.
It's always the same thing.
So I have an argument, right? Okay, so if we are going to the black market to acquire to acquire cigarettes, and we don't know what's in
these
cigarettes, which is worse?
Indeed, but even the legal ones, they're terrible. So it's regardless.
It's better of the evil.
It's the lesser of two evils.
That's right.
Both are evil. But, you know, when you're discussing about this issue about black market and so on, the answer is not to not increase tax, but to do something about trying to curb the smuggling. You know,
this is a part where I want to argue, and I think some of the smokers probably will call in, because we're definitely going to get LTY calling in. I can sense that. You know, the thing is that I don't know whether you guys were involved in the Tak Nak campaign. You know,
I was,
because the Tak Nak campaign is very much driving kind of like a highlighting women's role in stopping this. It started off with this nurse kind of going around the wards and then seeing an Indian man having a leg amputated. Then there was a Malay man who was dying of lung cancer, and then the wife was pregnant. Mm. And then lastly, there was a Chinese woman who had all her teeth all completely rotted away.
Yeah.
That's right,
yes.
Right. Well, the thing is that my students are specifically asked, because, you know, I teach at Monash, and then we have every year we have a problem-based learning on this particular topics. And then what they are analysing is what exactly is an effective deterrent for people who smoke. Mm-hmm. So what is interesting is that Tak Nak campaign is particularly successful. And also in Thailand, there's another successful campaign. Is that a child mm-hmm. going to yes. an adult and asking for the lights for his cigarette. You know, let's say an 8-year-old child mm-hmm. and then going there mm-hmm. and then do that. Yeah. And then suddenly it becomes very real that what you're doing is killing a child, mm-hmm. you know. And then that was when they said, you shouldn't smoke. But, you know, the child said, but you are smoking. Mm-hmm. I'm only borrowing a light. I'm not doing anything else. And that impacts so much. So in some way, looking into the psyche and insight of a smoker and working out what is a deterrent is a very important way to move forward, because mm-hmm. the plain packaging and everything like that may not be the answer.
But having said that, this same study in The Lancet has found that in some countries they have succeeded in helping people quit, mostly through a combination yes. of high taxes, warning on packages, as well as educational programs. Yes. So I want to find out the messaging. Are we getting our messaging all wrong here in Malaysia?
Yeah.
We'll come back and find out more up next. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. I'm going to come back and just kill this conversation, because Jimmy says, just make smoking illegal.
Illegal.
Yeah, right? So there. If only.
Kills the conversation altogether. We'll come back and find out more up next on The Bigger Picture. To BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It's our Health and Living segment with Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist.
Hello.
How are you today, George?
I'm excited.
You are. Topic today is about smoking, because The Lancet came up with a study that says that smoking now causes 1 in 10 deaths worldwide. And this is a new study, and they showed half of them in just 4 countries: China, India, US and Russia. Where would you say we stand, Dr. Zariha? Oh, by the way, we have Dr. Zariha Zain in the studio with us. She's also from the Malaysian Women's Action for Tobacco Control and Health. And you're also an addiction specialist, I understand.
No, not really. I'm a tobacco control specialist.
Okay. Yeah. Good enough for today's chat. Our phone lines are open if you'd like to give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. Dr. Zariha, where do we stand in Malaysia?
Yes, the 10% of all deaths due to tobacco, it kind of applies to, you know, almost all the countries, and including Malaysia. So for Malaysia, it's about 20,000 deaths every year, approximately.
Caused by smoking.
Yes, from smoking. I mean, not all heart attacks and lung cancers and so on, but a big majority of lung cancers, yes. But heart attack and so on, there is attributable factors other than smoking. So after removing all that, just the smoking component, and plus the other diseases caused by smoking, that is the 10%. So in Malaysia, it's about 20,000. So we're not far off from the study that has been done. Now, if you're asking me about how do we fare in this whole thing, and I mentioned already that we have a lot of room for improvement. We've still got a lot of things to do. Now, we together with 179 countries in the world, we are party to the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, FCTC, which is an international convention and international law that proposes in this law all the possible ways of countering or controlling tobacco at the country level. And for Malaysia, we've still got a lot more to do, like our no smoking areas. We don't really meet...
Who enforces? I wouldn't dare go up to a smoker and say, excuse me, you're not supposed to smoke here. I would be too afraid
I wish you do.
Do you know...
I would be afraid to do that.
Do you know that my cousin, who's quite a heavy smoker in Singapore, and then recently told me that he has been slapped with so many fines. They're plain clothes police, mm-hmm. actually, in the streets. And then if you are smoking in the area that's not designated, and then you're just given a fine straight away, mm-hmm. and then like a summons straight
that
away.
That is Singapore. George. They fine you for everything.
It's a fine country.
It's a fine country.
I know, but the thing is that, you know, reinforcement in Malaysia is like, you know, it's like, you know, you'll probably be safe all the summons for the special offer later on just to pay for it, right? Okay.
Oh dear, typically Malaysian.
I'm curious, who enforces? I was reading that the local councils are supposed to enforce.
Actually, the Control of Tobacco Products Regulations under the Food Act of the Ministry of Health, and the ones that is enforcing is the Ministry of Health's enforcement officers. They're limited numbers. And also, the local government can also enforce it because they also have enforcement officers that could do this. But the law itself does not empower a lot more people to get, you know, things done right. Like I mentioned, the enforcement officers, they're very limited in numbers, and they also are required to also enforce the other aspects of the Food Act, like...
Oh, right, so it's all lumping together. So you have to do hygiene and then, you know, smoking. And
exactly, like. it's too much.
But at the end of the day, does it really work? It's like, you know, these sort of like a fine, you know, it's just like DBKL is trying to fine people for double parking and that sort of thing.
I can tell you, you know, community pressure will work. You don't need enforcement officers.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly,
but I wish I had more guts
to go up there and say, oi, take that away, you're harming me. You know, it's like, I'm the victim of your cigarette.
If there are more of us who do that, then...
Yes, we need to empower everybody because everybody has the right for clean air. And if somebody is forcing you to breathe in secondhand smoke, it's your right to tell them not to, right?
I like this right stock because you know why? They have a right to smoke.
This is when we're going to get the smokers calling in and say, look, you know, the rights of the non-smoker, but it's also the rights of the smoker.
It is. But the rights of the non-smoker will be violated immediately by the smoker.
But the imposition is also violating the rights of the smokers.
Mm-hmm. At the moment now, if they're smoking in places where they're not supposed to, then they're in violation of the law. And of course, there, like I say, we're not enforcing or we're not actually having no smoking areas wide enough. By right, a lot more places should be non-smoking.
Okay, so talking about rights, Jimmy says we should make smoking illegal. What are your thoughts on that?
If only we can. I mean, it is a legal product. It's so sad. I mean, one day, perhaps, it would be illegal. I wish it happens during my lifetime. But
it would be first in Singapore, right?
Well, why hasn't Singapore done it yet?
Right? Yeah, it's not going to be easy because it is still a legal product. So, and there is a country, Bhutan, that tries to make it illegal. I'm not exactly sure if they're successful, but
the happiest place on earth.
Yes, exactly.
Will certainly become the happiest place for non-smoker, but not so happy for smokers.
Yes,
the smokers should be happy because they're not smoking anymore.
And they're not spending too much money and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask you some questions, right? You know, in the same study that you know, Mira alluded to earlier on about 1 in 10 deaths attributed by smoking, and then they also highlighted that 1 in 4 men are smokers and 1 in 8 women are smokers. What are we seeing in Malaysia? I also want to find out, do you have any statistics of new takers? Because what I worry about are the young people who take up smoking. Do we have any statistics on those?
Yes, we do. We have the study, the Global Adult Tobacco Survey in Malaysia. It has been shown that about half of men, almost half of men in Malaysia,
Smokers. Are you serious?
Yes.
You know, it's like this study for China, India, and also Brazil's are heavy smoker areas, and they are 1 in 4. In Malaysia, we're 1 in 2.
Yeah.
What about women?
Women, it's a lot less. In fact, it's only about 1% of women.
Oh, okay.
But it's probably creeping up already.
Because in those countries, the statistics shows that it's 1 in 8. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. What about new people, like young people taking up smoking? That really saddens me a little bit.
Yeah. There is also a survey on youths. It has been shown that 30% of boys actually tried up smoking. And we get like something like 5,000 new smokers among this group every year. And that is very worrying. But There's no subsequent study. The last one was in 1999, I think. Yeah.
So 5,000 per year of new boys coming forward, kind of like a taking up this as a habit.
Yes, that was the study done in 1996.
That's a long time.
Yeah, long time ago. So 20 years ago.
Yeah.
30% have tried smoking. Yeah. All right. Brazil has done very well. Mm. They have reduced the number of smokers. They've seen a drastic reduction. What did they do so well?
Well, one thing about Brazil, there is a lot of political will in implementing the provisions of the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, or the FCTC. Although they don't have plain packaging like Australia, their pictorial warnings on cigarette packs are huge, real huge. And then they also have smoking cessation, just like any other countries, and they have no smoking areas and so on. And all those things add up together. You can't just do tobacco control one at a time. You know, you just increase tax and not do the others, or you just give provide smoking cessation services and not do the other. All these things that is dictated in the FCTC should be done together. It should be done simultaneously. Only then it would be
so in a holistic manner.
Mm-hmm. Exactly,
which is what we're not doing.
We're not. I like the way you said that in Brazil they have political will. So
exactly.
What about us?
It is the political will.
So in Malaysia we don't?
We don't have enough.
All right.
We need more.
Elaborate.
Okay. Like for example, the Act, the Tobacco Control Act, that has been, you know, talked about in the media. Not just recently, it's been talked about for many years now. And it's still not seen. You know,
what are we supposed to see?
Yeah, what is in this act?
The act needs to be implemented. The act needs to be enacted. It has not been tabled in parliament yet.
What is supposed to be in the act?
In all the provisions in the FCTC.
Such as?
Like, for example, the pictorial warnings, it needs to be bigger, and the taxes, and then...
But we're doing all of that. I mean, tax went up 36%.
Yeah. How much is a packet of cigarettes at the moment? On average? It's probably a second...
20 ringgit?
It's a bit less, maybe 17.
Slightly, yeah.
17.
That's a lot of money.
It is. I mean, if you smoke a packet a day, you know, your significant amount of your salary will go towards that.
Exactly. So it's also... So in
some way we're doing that already.
Yes.
And the picture is pretty gory and pretty big.
Yes. And I also understand Putrajaya is considering plain packaging as well.
Yeah, the thing is that it's just considering and considering and considering.
Okay, Putrajaya, come on, just put those plain packaging going.
Yeah.
So we have, you know, we're ticking the boxes
here. To get that 0.5%?
Yeah.
Not necessarily just 0.5.
It's better than nothing.
You know,
No, what you need to do is just show some pictures of, you know, men having erectile dysfunction, and that will be a great deterrent.
It will sell very well.
seriously.
Is that a big problem, Dr. Zuriha? Yeah. I mean, when it comes to smoking.
Erectile dysfunction? Mm-hmm. George should answer that. Yeah, he's saying all this.
George will answer that. I suffer from it.
You don't smoke, George.
I do not.
Okay, so I have a problem because when smokers say, show me the signs, show me the relationship between smoking and heart disease and all of that. And this is my challenge. It could have been caused by other factors.
That's right.
Right? So how do I go up to somebody and say, you know, if you keep smoking, you're going to increase your risk of either bladder cancer or erectile dysfunction, George? How do I convince them?
Indeed, because, you know, like you said earlier on, show me the evidence. The immediate thing they will say is that, yeah, I understand, but it's not conclusive because you can choose 1,001 reasons not to believe in it. So therefore, you can always come up with excuses to say, yes, but other causes will result in it. But when people come to see me, they really do suffer from it already. And then there is no other way from, regaining their manhood per se by actually stop smoking, and they need to be on medications, you know, in order to, and you know, then restore their sexual functions. So whenever it's a stop, if they're at early stages, sometimes they don't actually need to take medication long term. And those send warning signals to men who are at early stage of damage caused by the cigarette. But something that always asks me is about e-cigarette. Now we're kind of like going into another area, you know. What's your view on e-cigarette as a as an alternative to the damage of smoking?
Well, e-cigarette, no doubt, it is less risky than, I mean, it's less dirty. Cigarettes are so dirty because it's not just delivering this nicotine that is causing the addiction, but it has got like 7,000 other chemicals and poisons in it. It's very, very dirty. Unlike e-cigarette, which delivers that in that pure form.
Oh, so but it's actually defined amount of chemical rather than a range of all these.
I don't want to be sounding like I'm supporting it, but but it's definitely cleaner, but it's still not safe. It is not safe.
Okay, if we see a world 20 years from today, right, actually, rather than everybody kind of like, you know, puffing away with a real cigarette, an e-cigarette is the alternative that is lesser of the two evils. Would that be that bad?
Yeah. Well, if I would advise smokers to just stop and not take an alternative. But some countries...
But therein lies the challenge, isn't it? To stop, you need some kind of help, right?
Yes.
Some kind
of help. It is available. It is available. Help is available.
I think our biggest concern in this country, as far as e-cigarettes is concerned, is not so much smoking cessation, but the young people picking it up as a lifestyle problem. And there is where we're coming from. And there's still a lot we don't know about e-cigarettes.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, we didn't... Smoking was fine when it first came out until we realized the effects
much later on.
We don't want to be
so we don't want to go down the same path as far as e-cigarettes is concerned. But I have to say, in the UK, in public health and all of that, they're very much behind e-cigarettes as a smoking cessation
tool.
Plan.
That's right. And then also... It's regulated by government rather than...
Yes, it must be regulated. Yeah, you can't just, you know, let everybody just...
So I guess this is an area that we can see how it develops in the next 5 years or so.
Exactly. So we'll come back and continue this discussion. We're discussing the death of tobacco. Well, will we ever...
Optimistic view there.
Are we fighting a losing battle? Some research came out in The Lancet to say that 1 in 10 deaths worldwide is now caused by smoking. Mm-hmm. And so we'll come back and find out more after the market update on BFM 89.9. Welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, in the studio with me. It's a Friday. It's rainy. It's gloomy. Well, if you're on the road, watch that car in front of you. It is a long weekend. I'm sure a lot of you are actually leaving the city. We're discussing tobacco control and smoking. those of you, I think it's interesting, the conversation so far. We've spoken about regulation. Dr. Zariha Zain from the Malaysian Women's Action for Tobacco Control and Health in the studio with us, helping us understand what's happening in the country as well as globally. So I think my next question is, you know, if we can do a lot more, but given what we already have, what do you think our most effective ways, Dr. Zariha? And, you know, we don't need government to do these things. We can start at home. I think as parents, we have a role to play in this, right?
We do. Definitely.
So how much? So while we wait for policymakers to make decisions, what can we do in the meantime?
Well, the mothers at home, they have to...
See, that's another thing on my list now. Now I have to deal with the children and smoking. First, I stop the husband, now the children.
You're taking on a lot.
Didn't you know, George?
But still, the main important strategy would be taken by the government. You need policies. And the government needs to be firm on it. To stand firm on taking up these policies and making sure the political will is always up there. That is what we need a lot more in Malaysia, seriously. And we need to make sure that the tobacco industry don't interfere into these policies. And that is what is happening all the time.
You think that tobacco industry is interfering? In what way?
They're putting a lot of pressure and they're using front groups to be their voice. Mm. As well. And just now, it's very interesting that you're reading the market. BAT is up there. I mean, no, regardless of what we're doing, they're still up there. We need to put them in their right places. They're killers. They kill people.
We have shareholders. George, you have shares, do you?
No, move your shares to somewhere else.
No. The reality is that they are a group of people who are just fighting for that right. I really think in some way that, you know, that caters for a group of people. What I want to see is, number one, that group is not growing too fast. And number two, because, you know, you're respecting smokers' rights as well in some degree. And then number two is that for those people who choose to quit, because so far we've been talking about deterrence, we've been talking about prevention, preventing the new people. But how do, you know, if we have LTY calling in miraculously and said, look, Dr. Zariha, I want to quit from today. At age of 75 or so, is it too late for LTY to quit? Is there any benefit for him to quit?
Well, of course, the younger you quit, the better.
The better, that's right. Well, he thinks he's pretty young. I think he's quite young. He sounded young.
But quitting at any age is good than continuing to smoke. But the thing is that it's not just about smokers who are already so addicted to the smoking. No doubt, you need to get them to quit because the deaths that we were talking about, the 1 in 10, they are the people who are smokers.
Right.
And you really need for them to stop smoking so that they can come back and enjoy the same risk as non-smokers. It will take about 15 years.
15 years.
That's why the younger you quit, the better.
So if LTY comes to you, and then what strategy will you provide him? He's our regular listener. Listeners who, you know, who says, you know, I've been smoking for so long, nothing happens to me. Mm-hmm. You know, the usual argument to say, you know, there was one French woman who smoked until she's 104 and that sort of things, right? If one day he woke up and said, I don't want to do this anymore, he's spending too much money all my life to do this, what sort of strategy will you provide him for to help him to quit?
Not just LTY, but anybody, anyone. Really.
It would be a smoking cessation strategy that we would you know offer to anybody.
What would they be included in there? Would it be any medication? Would there be any, you know, like cold turkey versus slow reduction, or you know, will you lock them up or something like that? What are the ways that is effective?
Right, of course, cold turkey would be good. It takes a lot of motivation and strength on the part of the person who wants to quit. But if you can't, you still need those nicotine. It can be replaced through a nicotine replacement therapy. There are chewing gums, there are patches, and there are also other drugs like varenicline that could also help smokers to quit. But there are so many smokers who actually, you know, ex-smokers, they don't need all these drugs. They could do it on their own. Mm-hmm. They don't even come forward to get services from.
I'm just going to throw a spanner in the works. We're very hard on the tobacco industry and advocacy groups when it comes to anti-smoking and all of that. You're loud. We hear you and we understand why. But I don't understand why we're not as hard and we're not talking about political will when it comes to sugar. Mm-hmm. Sugar is a huge problem.
Yes.
I mean, smoking, we are leading in terms of diabetics in Southeast Asia. We're not talking as loudly as we can about sugar for some reason.
We should do for both.
You know, and that is an industry as well.
Well, I mean, right? without naming any names...
Sugar is a huge problem, George.
You know, from sugar, it is a huge problem. Smoking is a problem, sugar is a problem, alcohol is a problem. That, you know, if we, like you said, you know, that we need to have that political will and eventually we turn into this nanny state. Don't you think?
Do we have a choice?
A slippery slope.
No, that's right. Well, it's like, do we want that?
Okay, if sugar was really expensive, for an example, do you not think that most of us would reduce our consumption of sugar, don't you think? 2009, numbers show that Malaysians consume 26 teaspoons of sugar per person per day. 26 teaspoons.
It's probably all
George.
In Kelantan.
No, that is not true. This is the whole country. So, you know, it all comes down to the same thing, is how much of it is political will, how much of it goes back to the home and, you know, schools, for an example.
Yeah, well, I'm not a smoker. I don't particularly like sweet things that much. And then, well, only if they are, you know, some really nice dessert from Kelantan, you know. It's like, you know. But the thing is that I don't particularly want to live in a political will country that, you know, controls what I can do and what I can't do. I think that education is the most important thing to aware that what you put into your body. I really think that at the moment, we can blame on industry, we can blame on the government, not hard enough on it. But the thing is that when we all have to start bottom up from the family to educate our young to say that these things are bad for you, and then whatever you put into your body like this, there will be consequences that you have to pay for eventually.
Yes, it's so true. I mean, awareness and education is very important. But the government needs to put those guards. It has still got to be done. If supposing you tell children that, you know, smoking is bad, sugar is bad, but you make it so widely available, you don't have means to control the availability, it doesn't work. So it has got to be done together. Mm-hmm. Both has got to be done at the same time.
Fantastic. We're running out of time. Dr. Zariha, would you have a message?
Yes, I really hope that the people at the Ministry of Health is hearing me out. Please get the law up and running as soon as possible, if possible before the election. It's very important that we need the law up quickly.
And enforcement.
And enforcement, yes, of course. And awareness, of course, of the population.
Of course. Thank you very much for joining us. Coming up next, Dr. George and I are going to be discussing exercise into your 50s. Now, George is looking really slim and nice. he's approaching 50. We're going to have that discussion up next. Thank you again for joining us today, Dr. Zariha Muhammad Zain from the Malaysian Women's Action for Tobacco Control and Health on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, and Dr. George Lee and I in the studio. We have we want to talk to you. I mean, it was all that smoking talk and tobacco control and all of that. What did you think, George?
I agree with her that, you know, at the end of the day, it is a multifaceted way to control this. I still think that, you know, education at home is crucial, and then, you know, to bring awareness, you know, you have that right to do so, but you have to remember whatever you put into your body, eventually you have to pay for it in terms of health. Mm-hmm. It's just like what we're going to talk about next.
Exactly.
You know, when you put on a lot of weight, and then, you know, eventually you have to sweat it out and exercise.
And the study in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. Now, this research was carried out in Australia, and they say if you are over 40, doing moderate exercise several times a week is the best way to keep your mind sharp. If you're over 50. I know you're getting there, George.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
It shows that thinking and memory skills definitely improve your heart muscles, you know, all of that. Heart and your muscles also, you know, strengthen.
I know. It's like, you know, apparently the study also showed that for those who already have signs of cognitive decline, actually that regular exercise is going to reverse it. It's like there is some hope for me now.
And I think it's Alzheimer's or cognitive decline. It improves by a third if you exercise.
That's right.
So it helps physical activity. How does it help?
I mean, long we know that, you know, regular exercise, you know.
But you don't associate it with brain health.
I know. It's because we always talk about type 2 diabetes. You know, it will improve your sugar control, you know, cancer. You know, if people exercise more, have had, actually have more positive outcome and that sort of thing. But to play a role in the health of the brain actually is something that we don't talk about much.
So then you're wondering what it actually does, right, to the brain when you exercise. What's happening is there's greater supply of blood, oxygen, as well as nutrients that will boost your health. And the growth hormones that help the formation of neurons and new neurons and connections. And that's exactly what's happening every time you exercise. And it's an interesting exercise they've given here as an example, George, is Tai Chi.
That's right.
Really recommended for people over the age of 50 who cannot manage other challenging forms of exercise. I mean, you're cycling a lot now, right? Do you think you will continue cycling way into your 50s?
Well, I hope so. Because I only took this up about 4 months ago. You know, I've lost about 18 kilos.
Wow.
I know. I firmed up my muscles. And it's like, in fact, I actually went to the health and living event, and then people said, hey, Dr. George, you're not as fat as I imagined.
So we got to stop all those BMI is overweight side.
Well, the thing is that this study particularly, you know, it's assuring for me. It's because they did quite a lot of brain tests on people who are above 50 after they exercise regularly. And that include reading, thinking, and then also learning, reasoning. And then while muscle training, for example, like weightlifting, actually have significant effects on memory as well. So, you know, for me, to be honest with you, I feel like I have a lot more energy. I regularly exercise. And in fact, now, if I actually lose the momentum for 2-3 days and then I indulge on a bit of steaks or something like that, I feel like I don't feel right. I just need to go back on those bikes.
Do you find your new neurons and connections? Do you feel no. smart?
I'm more focused, to be honest with you.
Oh, thank goodness.
That's right. Finally.
There you go, the evidence. So the NHS, they recommend 150 minutes of moderate aerobic activity every week for adults. And when you are wondering what moderate activity is, it is actually you being able to hold a conversation while you're doing moderate activity. Can you have a conversation while cycling?
Yeah,
you're probably doing much more than moderate, George. So well done.
Right.
So this cuts your chances of depression and dementia by a third, and it boosts your mental health at any age if you do that moderate activity of 150 minutes a week. And of course, don't forget your diet.
Yes, indeed. You know, you can't just exercise.
Yeah.
And because there are 100 other things that actually will have adverse effect to your brain. And so, you know, eat well-balanced diet. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. Go easy on those alcohols because that actually kills the brain cells as well. No matter how much you exercise, you know, the brain cells will diminish. And also, most importantly, early on, we'll talk about smoking, right? Because cut down on those smokings as well. And then really, you will have a really nice, lives after 50. And you remember much of it. Otherwise, you know, your cognitive functions will not be so great.
Exactly. So that was our article for today, sharing how you should be doing at least some form of moderate exercise after the age of 50. Thanks for joining us today, George.
My absolute pleasure.
And Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.